Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Disney Brit podcast for Wednesday, the 16th of March. Thank you for joining us, and joining me, as always, is Juz.
You seem to get the whole sentence completely the wrong way around then. Hello, and hello, Disney
what do you mean people. I got it the wrong way around?
Because you sort of stopped as if saying, I've done that wrong.
No, I heard a strange sound of a mobile phone in the background.
And it wasn't mine.
Oh, whose was it?
Yeah, it's always crazy. Crazy on our own mobile phones.
No, that all 15 are turned off.
I don't know. And hello, Craig.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. We've gone very French this evening. Is there a particular reason?
Well, we do like to cover all parks.
Japanese.
Okay. Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. There we go. Jolly good. And it's good to be on air again. We're here having listened to Craig rant for the past 5 minutes. Luckily, because you listened to this recorded, you didn't get to hear that bit. And we unfortunately do. In fact, Juz has come up with a new idea, haven't you, Juz?
Had I?
Yeah,
I don't know.
The new podcast we're going to bring out.
Yeah. I don't know what we said. We call it just Craig Rants, isn't it?
Craig
and to be
Rant.
Honest, I forgot the idea because we just had to listen to him go on and on and on.
Anyway, have we had a good week or 2 weeks has it been since the last podcast?
Yeah, it's been okay.
And just for those people who hate us teasing them, Juz, we've got a little project
just
that we're
hate,
working on, haven't
hates
we?
Us.
Or just hate us. We've got a little project we're working on, haven't we, that we're going to announce soon.
No, not at all. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's all I'm saying. We've got a little project. Well, we say a little project. It's quite a big project, and I think we have to give Juz a round of applause for this project, because he's done most of the work. I said round of applause. Yes. Don't headbutt your microphone.
I was flicking it with a pink glitter-coloured pencil.
We hate Adam.com.
That's basically
Craig's invested money into it, and the amount of people who are keen on it is unbelievable.
Anyway,
sponsorship's gone through the roof.
Craig, how has your fortnight been?
No, my fortnight's been okay, busy, but it's been fine.
Okay, that's good. Doesn't tell us anything. Have you been to the Disney Store recently?
Here we go. Okay, right. No, I haven't, Adam. Have you?
I have. You need to head to the Disney Store because they've got a sale on at the minute. And we went in on Saturday and they've got a load of stuff at 50% off. So I got a great T-shirt for about £7 and loads of other bits and pieces. So if you've not been over, you need to head over and go and buy a load of cheap stuff.
Cheap stuff? Disney? That doesn't go together.
No, but I've got a new Mickey Mouse clock that cost me about £10 instead of £20 and a T-shirt that was reduced and all that sort of stuff. So just to let you know, they do seem to have some sort of sale on at the Disney Store. So
yes, people appreciate your Disney T-shirts, don't they?
They do. They love my Disney T-shirts.
Yeah, that fellow in Disneyland Paris did, didn't they?
Yeah.
I remember that. And yes. I agreed with him. Yes, he is.
Anyway, moving on. You're just mean. Should we do some news?
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Okay, let's do some news then, and we're looking particularly over in Japan at the moment. We want to sort of update you with everything that's been going on over there, what with the earthquake that's happened recently. Craig, can you tell us a little bit more about how it's affected Tokyo Disneyland?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously, you know, all serious and joking aside, this is a very serious and sad thing that's happened. And, you know, I speak for all of us when I say, you know, our hearts and thoughts and feelings are with all of the people over there at the moment. I know that I have, you know, one friend, everybody seems to know somebody in Japan, but a good friend of mine, his wife's Japanese, is over there. He was working on the 41st floor of a building. And then had to walk 6 miles home because obviously all the trains and stuff stopped. So, you know, but thankfully they're all right. So, you know, that's that's good, some good news. But the park, you know, there was kind of a little bit of hysteria around what had happened. There were some television pictures of some water over one of the car park areas, and everyone had thought that the tsunami had hit Disneyland Paris. Now, for those of you that don't know what kind of Japan geography is like, both of the Disney parks are kind of somewhat in the middle of Japan, but sit on like the kind of top of a lake in all
respects.
Tokyo
Bay, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're kind of sitting right at the top there. And so they were actually quite a long way from the tsunami. Now, people thought that when these parks flooded, it was the tsunami. But actually, no. What has happened over there has been confirmed by the Tokyo police, is that where the earthquake had struck and had cracked the land, water had then kind of like from the water table had been able to rise up through the surface of the earth, I suppose, to the top. Mm. And that's what the water was. So it wasn't necessarily the tsunami. Obviously, it was connected with it. Now, there was about 70,000 people in the park when the earthquake struck. They were evacuated from all of the rides and attractions because they weren't sure, A, if there's going to be any more shocks, or B, whether they were safe. So they were outside. They were actually there for quite a while. I mean, this struck in about 2:45 in the afternoon. Yeah, so, you know, they were there long into the evening and then to the early morning. Disney were brilliant as usual. They supplied them with blankets, hot food, water, until transportation was available to get some of them back out. There was also concern that some of the monorail supports had been damaged, so obviously that wasn't running, but they did manage to get people out, and they have managed to get you know, a lot of people out of the parks. Now, the parks were both closed on Saturday. The Oriental Land Company, as we know, that operates and runs these, has been investigating and double checking everything. But you know, if you do head over to Adam's site, disneybrit.com, you'll see, if you want to, some photographs of some of the damage that was caused, just to kind of the pavements where they've cracked and moved. But thankfully, you know, nobody in the Disney area was hurt.
No, and we do know that the parks were going to be closed for at least 10 days while they check everything out to make sure everything's safe. The thing is, in Japan, this happens all the time. So a lot of the buildings that they've got over there are able to withstand these sort of forces, and they're designed to do that. But Disney just want to make sure everything's okay. They want to make sure pavements and everything are fixed, because, you know, Disney is the sort of company want things to look pristine, so that they want to make sure that the presentation of Disney out there is perfect when they reopen all the parks and everything. But as Craig said, you know, we do wish everybody well over there. You know, we're seeing the pictures on the news of the devastation it's caused, and we are thinking about everybody. Anything you want to add, Joe's?
No, I think you two have summed it up perfectly, to be honest with you.
There you go. Well, OK, over to me, and we're going over to the Wave at the Contemporary Resort. Those of you who have never been, it's downstairs, it's sort of by basically the check-in area for the Contemporary Resort. It's an amazing restaurant. Its full title is The Wave. It's like an American flavours sort of restaurant. We've eaten there for dinner, and the food was absolutely stunning. And although they're usually open for breakfast, they've just opened a brand new breakfast buffet part of the restaurant, where you're still going to have the a la carte menu, so you're still going to be able to go and enjoy all of that. But they've now got this area that's going to have so much stuff on it, it's untrue. It's going to have a smaller serving dishes, so that it's going to be more often replenished, therefore being tastier, fresher and hotter, basically. But there's going to be things like grits and bacon, there's going to be homemade gravy, hash browns, quiches, scrambled eggs, omelettes, sweet potato pancakes, those sort of things. A lot of stuff that we already know are going to be there. There's also going to be a lot of fruit, things like honeybell oranges, grapefruits, strawberries, star fruits in there also. But just generally some really nice looking food. And to be honest, this is a great restaurant anyway. And now that they're going to be serving a buffet there, if you get a buffet style meal with the service that you get in the Wave as well, it's certainly going to be somewhere, if we think about doing a buffet breakfast without characters, we'll go to again. Is it something that you might be tempted with, Craig?
Yeah, no, I quite like the Wave. I've had lunch in there. Nice location, and breakfast kind of sets you up. You could be a bit naughty, drive over there, have your breakfast, and then, you know, pop on the monorail into the park.
Yeah.
Kind of like that idea.
So it all sounds rather nice and rather good. So I'm looking forward to trying that out. And there's a picture on the Disney Parks blog and also on DisneyBrit.com of some of the sort of flowered mini Mickey waffles, and they're just making me look very hungry. The Wave, is it somewhere you fancy for breakfast, Juz?
I don't know. I'm undecided. I know you've ranted and raved about it.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
But no, I'm not sure. It's not my setting, really, is it?
You're not know. Anything that's sort of got the word deluxe in it, you're not into, are you?
No, it's got waffles. Waffles, Jazz. Waffles.
Yeah, but if I want waffles, I'll have him brought to my bed in Yacht Club or something, or Boardwalk.
Listen to him. I actually had my servants to go down and get dinner.
Yes.
Yes. It's servants, what I actually mean is children.
No, you wouldn't, because you don't have children on holidays with you.
No, that's true. They don't come on holiday with me. They're just there for the in-between times.
When he's 11, he'd be going, Dad, please come home to Disney. No.
No, you cost far too much now. You're an adult. Get out. Okay, moving on then, getting into the Magic Kingdom. Some news on Grad Nights.
But you didn't say Juz.
Juz. Ah. It's, just so you know, Juz. Grad Nights. Someone give him a poke.
No, in the sense that it's just like, Grad Nights, Juz. Or you probably said Japan, Craig.
DJ. Juz.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting rid of him.
Yeah, next that's thing. It. Moving on.
I don't know what I thought of this anyway. Anyway, Disney are getting rid of the Grad Nights. High School Musical, The Grad Nights. So it's a new series coming
school,
out there.
Well, High School Musical 4, Grad
yeah,
Night
Grad Nights ends, yeah. Grad Nights has been a tradition held every year since 1971. I'm not sure if that's true, I just made that up. To help celebrate young people this momentous time in their lives. But with the rise of the crowd levels at this time of year, Disney have decided it's not going to happen anymore. Oh. But do not despair, because they're going to offer some discount ticket prices next year with a free meal or something. But no, it's basically, I can understand where they're coming from. It takes a lot of time to host this event. It doesn't always work with everyone else's favourite. Having the event there, it's a tough one to do. I'm sure Universal will pick it up and have a grad night there. With excess of alcohol, but no, it's stopping. They are going to do a discount ticket, so I'm not sure.
In? Do you reckon we can get in on a graduate ticket? Do you think the three of us might be able to convince them?
I look so haggard and old. I'm getting some kind of professor of them.
Professor of stuff.
That's what I call it.
I'm the professor of stuff.
They can ask me any question on stuff and I know the answer.
Yes. Craig, what are you going to be a professor of?
Rounding,
ranting.
Yeah. Ranting.
And you can do that because you go, and I can prove it. Here's one of my lectures.
Yes.
Yeah. I vote.
University of Life, School of Hard Knocks. That's me, mate.
That's the one.
He says with a house in Orlando.
Yeah. Mate, with the bills
it's
coming.
A hard knock life, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. It's not fair, is it, really? I think he should just give us his house if he doesn't like it that much.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, just so somewhere that Adam and Zoe could go on holiday.
Yeah, in fact, we just have a wing, actually, just for two of us. That's fine, yeah. You can keep the other wing, and we'll have that wing. We'll just build a partition wall down the centre.
So, Harry, we'd like to take you. There's just not enough space in our four-bedroom house.
Sorry, Harry, yeah. We don't want to get the carpets dirty. Oh, anyway, Grad Nights are going. Sad, but true. I suppose if we're a UK listener...
Is it really sad, though?
Well...
Does it bother you?
Well, the thing is, there's got to be a reason for them stopping this. It's obviously not making them a massive amount of money. It must be...
There's your reason.
Yeah, Grad Nights obviously can't be as popular as it once was, otherwise they'd keep it going. And I think you came up with a very good point a minute ago, which is surely Universal are going to go, yeah, we'll have that, thank you very much, and there's going to be the opportunity for the alcohol there. We've always found that Universal are actually better with the sort of bands that they bring in. Certainly for things like a Grad Night, they would bring in some really great bands. They've got the bigger roller coasters, so I suppose, you know, yes, it's sad that they're not going to have it at Disney, but I'll be surprised if Universal don't take something up with this.
They do have a little Grad Night already, don't they, Universal?
Right.
I'll look into it while you keep
you look into that while we keep going, and we'll find out whether or not in a second they do. But we're moving on to Craig and some changes at Downtown Disney.
Surprise, surprise, Ride Makers is closing.
Silla.
It's just like she was in the same room then.
Surprise! Well, you're the Liverpudlian, right? Surprise, surprise!
It's Bob and Spit the Dog there as well.
What kind of silly was that? Surprise, surprise!
Surprise, surprise! Ride Makers.
And at this point, we've completely lost our entire US audience. Thanks for coming.
Silla was big in the US.
Was she? Yeah. She lost a lot of weight when she came back then.
Surprise, surprise!
Ba-dum-tsh.
<It's>...
Anyway. anyway.
Anyway, you're gonna lose your UK audience in a minute because I'll talk about Chip Foose, who nobody will know who he is unless you watch Overhauling, which I do. But anyway, Ridemakers, the biggest waste of space in downtown Disney, is closing on April the 30th of this year. It's housed within the doomed Virgin Megastore, which had the wonderful Diana exhibition, and now has housing this, which is closing because it was massive for like a little thing that was completely overpriced and never had anything in stock, with comments like, "We'll post it to you." That's what they said to us. "We'll post it to you. Make a cart and they're going to post it to me." With Mr. UPS man, will then knock on my door and ask for £20 in customs fees. Anyway, it's closing. Good riddance to it. No idea what's going to go in its place. There you go.
Okay. So that's disappearing. Do you know what? I quite like the Ridemaker store for the fact that they've got the massive, normal sized cars in them.
They've got the Chip Foose pickup truck. They've got one of Chip's Foose, right? Is for those of you that don't know, it's a bit like.
I don't really care.
No, I do, because I think this guy's awesome. He basically takes cars and customizes them nicely.
So it's like your own Chip Foo podcast.
Well, I might do.
And to be honest, it sounds like something I'd order at a Chinese. I'll have a Chip Foo, please.
Chip Foose, F-O-O-S-E.
Sorry, I'll have a Chip Foose, please.
Chip Foose. Tell you what, he would do wonders with your Hyundai, Juzzy Bear. You wouldn't see anything like it, mate. But no, he does brilliant things with cars, and it's not kind of Pimp My Ride. He doesn't put, you know, 50-inch plasma screens under the bonnet. And they have got one of his own cars in there, and, you know, it's really nice stuff. Well, you know, he takes old cars as well, kind of classic 60s cars, and he does them all up. But it's going, which is sad because that car's going to go, but it's not sad to get rid of Ride Makers because it was completely overpriced and a waste of money.
That's the thing. It was very, very expensive, and it only used a small proportion of the space they've actually got in that building. It used the whole of the bottom floor, but if you looked up at the amount of space there was above that, you know, I'm sure Disney put them in there because they knew we've got nothing in there, this would be a nice little learner for us, but they surely have some bigger ideas for this venue.
Yeah, stick an Apple store shop in there.
But we talked about this in Destination Disney though. Do you think an Apple store is really the best use of that space?
No.
I think it'd be cool. No, it might not be the best use, but I still think it'd be cool for it.
Go on, Juz, because you're our resident computer geek.
What
do you think? Apple Store, yay or nay?
I've changed my mind. I was going to say Apple Store. I want an Apple Store with local live bands up in the balcony area with a coffee shop.
That would be
cool. But yeah. What I decided what I want is an M&M store.
Oh, I see. An M&M store would also be very good. The only thing with the M&M store is there's already one in... Got to get this right. No, all at Millennia, isn't there?
There is, but why not? Why not have one there? The trade they would do would be unbelievable.
Yeah, that's true. Is it Mall at Millennia or Florida Mall, Craig, that's got an M&M?
I know there's probably one at both, actually.
Mall, I think, isn't it?
Probably one of those.
M&M store would be cool, or at least part of that to be an M&M store. I think it could almost be like it's a mini Church Street in a way, in the fact that what they could do is they could sort of put lots of little stores in there and then build it up to be almost a little...
Indoor market
style thing, yeah, which would be quite cool.
Or another way is have upstairs as dining, and downstairs all the countries have kiosks like food and wine, where you can go and buy all the different foods from around the countries in Epcot, and then either eat it on the way out or eat it upstairs.
So like a little international dining location in downtown Disney. So that'd be quite cool.
Or turn it into a roller disco.
But there's also
you just keep falling off the balcony upstairs.
Is Craig stuck in the 1980s tonight or what?
I'd love to do a roller disco. I used to DJ at a roller disco in South End, and we used to say, "Slow yourselves down, turn around, let's go the other way. Come on!"
You said that before elsewhere as well.
He just wants basically a shop full of Duran Duran, Rick Astley, and...
How about that? The 80s retro store.
Yeah, the 80s retro store. There we go.
That'd be good. I'll go there.
There are rumours, though, that they're looking at bringing in... the ESPN Zone was one, and also turning it into an IMAX, which was another.
I'm sorry, but our ideas are a lot better than theirs.
I like our ideas. Our ideas are definitely much better than theirs. And talking about ideas that we think are quite good, Via Napoli over in Epcot is an amazing restaurant. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. Do you know what? I've heard a few things recently about service at Via Napoli and people being really unhappy with the service they got when the restaurant first opened. What was your service like last time you were there, Craig?
Brilliant. Very, very good. In fact, it was my mum's birthday, so they all came over and sang happy birthday to her in Italian as well.
Now, we went... go on, sorry, can I come?
I was going to say, it was fine. You know, no problem at all.
Because we went, I think, 2 days after it opened, and the service we got was fantastic. There was no problems with it whatsoever. Our food came out on time. It was still hot. There was no problems with our order. We were in and out in just over an hour. And I thought the actual time we were in the building for the meal was absolutely perfect. And yeah, I've heard a lot of people recently saying, oh, service was terrible, they kept getting the wrong orders, etc. And I know nothing of this. I find it very strange. But anyway, talking about Beer Napoli, they have once again reopened the takeaway window. They sort of didn't announce that this would be coming back, but it did on the 7th of January. It reappeared, disappeared, and it reopened about a week or two ago. And the takeaway menu has been slightly updated. The last time when they had the trial, the pizza cost around $6.50 a slice. But it seems that the management have actually had a rethink about this, and they've sort of sympathised with the guest's wallet, and they've reduced some of the cost. We've got cheese pizzas now, which is tomato and mozzarella cheese, which is a good pizza. It's now $4.50. You've got the pepperoni, tomato and mozzarella cheese. That's $5.25. They're also doing some mini cannellonis, which is like it says a crispy pastry shell filled with sweet ricotta cheese and chocolate, which sounds really good. That's $3.50. And you've got sodas and waters. And they have got the Moretti Italian beer of 16 ounce, which is $9. So that's quite expensive. But it's good to see that Via Napoli is back, and it's brought the sort of the opportunity for people to have that quick service meal from the same restaurant, which is really nice. I don't know though whether I'd want to, I really enjoyed the experience of Via Napoli. I don't know whether I'd want to go to the takeaway because it was so nice inside.
If you're watching the fireworks though, then you'd want to have your pizza outside.
That's very true if you're watching the fireworks. But
where's my margarita?
They haven't got the four cheese pizza on, which I'm looking at now, and the four cheese pizza.
Oh well, forget it then. Oh god.
But the other thing is there's tomato and mozzarella cheese. Now, if I remember rightly, I don't remember having any tomato on any of the pizzas I had in the restaurant. Did you have any tomato on yours? Is it just the four cheese?
Well, no, I had the tomato base, didn't it? It didn't actually have tomatoes cut up.
Right.
I had the pepperoni in it.
And that had tomato.
Yeah, we had tomato sauce on it. You when they make them, they make, you know,
that's how they make pizzas. Base. Have you not had a pizza before? Just get pizza with the cheese, just slides off. You go, that's strange.
Maybe yeah, that's called cheese on toast, mate.
Yeah. Have people been lying to you all these years?
They brought the bread in freshly from Southport.
Hey.
I don't know. I don't remember having any tomato on my four cheese pizza. It's either.
You always have tomato base. That's how you make a pizza.
Honestly, wasn't any tomato on mine at all.
That's right. It was just a pizza base and they'd have four cheeses and melt it. That is cheese on toast.
It's a bit Worcester sauce on top and you're away.
So maybe I have got a complaint.
Was it square shape, your slices?
You've got to put the tomato on my pizza. I'm going back to complain. No. If you do know whether or not they had tomato on the pizzas, and
everyone knows.
Please do email us podcast@disneybrit.com and let us know. I'm very confused now. Will you be going on a little trip to the takeaway, Craig, in April?
No, because I don't think I will. I'd certainly go in there for dinner, but the takeaway I'm going to go to is Le Cellier and have the takeaway soup.
Oh yes, of course, because you can go up to the counter. And you can ask for the soup to take away, can't you?
But imagine the soup with a piece of cheese on toast.
Oh, you see. Yeah. Do you think if you ask nicely, they give you pretzel bread as well?
Oh, definitely. Or I'll just shout and say, where's the pretzel bread?
Because it's free, isn't it? He'll just walk in and go, yeah. Do you know who I am? And which will go, yeah, unfortunately.
Craig doesn't speak like that.
Does he not?
No, it sounds quite posh.
Do you know who I am, Cockney geezer?
Yeah, well, I make this a bit of bread, isn't it?
See?
I don't know, because you get it free in the restaurant, don't you? You don't pay for your pretzel bread, so I wonder whether they give you any if you ask nicely. There you go, that's your challenge, Craig. You've got to go and buy some cheese soup and see if you can get some free pretzel bread out of it as well.
I was going stuff two up each nostril and then walk out because no one's going to ask for them back.
Just go, yeah, go and sneeze on someone, go and lick them.
Just lick them. I'm sorry, I've licked this one now.
And then put it right back in the middle and mix it up so they don't know which one it is.
Put them behind your back and go, right, okay, which one do you want? Oh, I'll take them back then. Okay, that's fine.
Security's this way, sir. They're waiting for you outside my way.
I tell you, it's just cheese and bread.
I'm just going to go next time. Can I have your best cheese on toast, please? Yeah. Done in a wood-fired oven. Thank you. Okay, enough silliness. Let's head over to Hollywood Studios, where we're going to go to Disney Junior Live on stage.
We would do in a minute.
Yes.
Breaking news. Do 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 do. Universal Adventures. Do 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 do. To let you know, Universal's Grad Bash 11. Dates announced for Grad Bash 2011, April 15th, 30th, May the 6th, and May 7th. Please note, April the 15th and 30th are sold out. Jason Derulo, B.O.B., Pitbull, and DJ Khaled. Get down there. Well, can't they do two things?
It's just cheating.
It's not like you create a band and then just do one gig and go, that's fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Okay. Anyway,
back over to Disney.
Disney Junior live on stage, is that what you want me to talk about?
That is exactly what I want you to talk about.
Okay, the first video of Disney Junior live on stage has hit the tinternet, and it seems the new show isn't so new after all. Although the show has a new name, which is pretty new if you ask me, most of it has stayed the same from its previous incarnation, Playhouse Disney Live on Stage. Both Handy Manny and Little Einstein's story stay exactly the same, as does the overall theme of Minnie's birthday. I haven't got a clue about this. Jake and the Neverland Pirates is the new addition. Woohoo! Go Jake and the Neverland Pirates. And the new scene sees Jake and the crew come against Captain Hook and Mr. Smee and the Crocodile.
There you go.
I don't think it is the Crocodile, I just made that up. The new story also brings in some new theatre effects and a whole lot of new music. The Jake segment of the show lasts around 6 minutes and the ending has been altered minimally. So basically not a lot's changed, but as kids are kids, they will never remember what happens. You can check the video out if you go to www.thewordwenevertalkabout.com.
I was really disappointed when I saw what they'd done to the show. I was expecting it to be something brand new, and it wasn't. It was just that they'd inserted this Jake and the Neverland Pirates bit in and kept most of the rest of the show the same.
To be honest with you, it'd be new to Harry, wouldn't it?
No, he's... Oh, man. Am I have to take him on holiday just to shut you?
That would be nice to take your family on holiday.
Yeah. Kind of the point of a family holiday.
The rest of it he's seen. He's just not seen Jake and the Neverland Pirates, which isn't out here yet anyway. It doesn't come out here until I think it's going to be May time. Middle of May, I think it is. I think it's about 5th of May that they're going to be changing Playhouse Disney to Disney Junior over here. It's already happened in the US, I think. But Jake and the Neverland Pirates looks quite cool because I've looked at some of it on YouTube. But it's a shame that...
Well, it appeals to the right target audience.
Yes, it definitely does. No, have you watched any of it, Craig, yet?
Nope.
No,
I haven't, actually. We were speaking... When I was guesting on... your other radio show, they were Nikki was talking about it, and I'd never heard of it. It completely gone over my head.
No, it's brilliant.
So I quite fancy having a look at that. Is it cartoony?
Yes, it is. Have a look on YouTube. There's some bits on YouTube already of the show, so that's worth having a look. But the others are pretty much the same. It's all to do with Minnie's birthday, etc. They've altered the bits to do with what Jake and the Neverland Pirates give them towards the birthday party, and all that sort of thing, really. But other than that, the show is pretty much identical, which is a shame. Let's jump back over to Epcot then. And Craig, what's going on over at Le Cellier?
Well, apart from they've now put cling film over all of the bread rolls on the table so we can't go and lick them, from the 1st of March, they've now got a different evening menu. This is because they have a new chef, I believe. And they've made some changes to their menu. Also, I think has been widely rumoured, and now has been confirmed on Disney Brit, that it is now classed as a signature restaurant, which I think is a bit daft, and therefore will cost you 2 credits on your evening dining plan. Now, the lunch menu's also had a few tweaks, but still stays at 1 credit. So they've added a few things to the me and you. I won't go through all of these because we'll feel hungry as it's dinner time, but just for those that I know are going over there soon, you now have a black and blue steak tartare for $16.
Does that mean it's been beaten up?
Black and blue. Yeah, he's had a good slapping. Crab and apple salad. Steakhouse scissor salad. Artisan spicy chicken and chipotle sausage at $12. Tomato salad. They've probably taken the tomatoes from your pizza, Adam, and put them there. $12. Assortment of cheeses, $14. Let's go on to some entrees. They have the signature Le Cellier mushroom filet mignon, which is an 8-ounce. I'm sure it was bigger than that before. I'm sure it was a 9-ounce one.
That's pre-cooked, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to be
just really like an ounce when it comes back out, isn't it?
Yeah.
It should give you it after cooking and go, look, that's an 8-ounce post-burning. And then you go, woof.
Roasted venison medallions, king salmon, grilled bone-in ribeye. duck breast, pork tenderloins, prime New York strip.
They
have a vegetarian one, which is plate chips. No, potato leek and goat cheese quiche.
It's not plate chips, it's half-licked bread. It's fine.
Half-licked.
But what makes it, where does this go? There's your goat cheese. And your husband, he's eating the goat it came from.
They still have the maple creme brulee for those of you that were worried. But I don't think this needed to be. I think the popularity of this has made it a signature restaurant, and it was only became popular via people like us on the internet.
So if we slag it off, does it go down?
That's what we're going to do. Don't eat there. It's rubbish. What you want to go do is go to Sounds Dangerous.
But is this not silly? You couldn't have picked a worse attraction, could you? You really couldn't. I just find it really silly that Disney have sort of jumped on this sort of popularity bandwagon, and they've upped the prices. They've turned it to a signature restaurant. It's now 2 dining credits. It's possibly the most expensive restaurant now within a Disney theme park. And you know, as much as I love Le Cellier, I wouldn't pay it.
No, I'd go to the Longhorn. I'd go outside on the way home. I'd drive to the Longhorn Steakhouse, and I would have a much better steak, and it would be cheaper. Granted, I wouldn't get the cheddar cheese soup, but then I had a cup of that walking around.
Okay. Has this put you off going, Jess?
No. It's meat and taters. That's all Jess wants.
As long as they've still got the Who Am I game going on in the lobby while you're waiting for your table, I'm more than happy.
Adam, yeah. They always get Adam, obnoxious podcaster.
Who won? It's about rounds.
We were great. We were. Have we told this story before?
No, we were great, or you were great.
No. It doesn't just involve me. This involves me, Zoe, Craig, Debs, and Craig's kids. And we were sat in the lobby of the Cellier waiting for our table. And this cast member decided, as there was a lot of people in there, she would start this game of sort of 20 questions, who am I sort of thing. And everyone sat around, and she started doing these 20 questions, and some of the kids kept coming up with questions that she didn't actually know the answer to. She kept getting the answer wrong. And we continued to play. And I think, did we get 7 in a row between us?
We did, yeah. We were champs.
I think everybody just gave up in the end because they knew that we'd just get all the answers right. And I'm even sure that when our table was called, there was a small cheer heard. Because they could all play again. But no, I'm pretty certain it was... Wasn't it your kids and Zoe that were quite hot on a lot of them?
Yeah, Zoe was pretty good.
She was pretty good. So there you go, that's our little Le Cellier story, which has got absolutely nothing to do with the menu change, but we thought we'd tell you it anyway. Right, there's all our Walt Disney World news, and we're going to jump on a plane, fly over to Disneyland Paris, and we've got some news about what's going on over there. And the first bit of news we've got for you isn't strictly Disneyland Paris news, but it's something that Paramount Pictures are building their first Paramount Park in Europe. In fact, it's going to be the only Paramount Park other than outside of Asia that is going to be owned by the studios themselves. They owned a lot of parks and then sort of sold a lot of them off. And they reckon they're going to be building a new park in Murcia in Spain, which is sort of like the southeast part of Spain. And they reckon it's going to rival Disneyland Paris. Now, it's not going to open for a good few years yet. The building of this is going to begin somewhere towards the end of this year, the beginning of 2012. But the I've got to get his name right. Pedro Alberto Cruz, who is the Murcian Councillor for Culture and Tourism, announced that the construction would definitely be going ahead, because I think we talked about this a little while back as a bit of a rumour and a possibility. He said that it's going to be an exciting and amazing project, and they're going to be announcing more information about this at the initial presentation that's going to be held on the 25th of March. It's believed one of the executive vice presidents for Paramount is going to be there. Now, although they reckon this is going to be a rival to Disneyland Paris and it's going to be as big as Disneyland Paris is, there's actually 1,000 miles between the two different parks, so it's not particularly close in that sense, although it may attract some Spanish visitors to go there instead of Disneyland Paris. But you do get the better weather down in the southeast corner of Spain all year round than you do in France. But let's give you some indication of the sort of things that are going to be coming to this new Paramount Park. Apparently you've got the first off, there's going to be 4 hotels, a 36.5 hectare theme park and also an aquatic park that's going to cover another 10 hectares. The aquatic park isn't quite confirmed as of yet. There's also, the park itself is going to have four distinct zones. One of them is going to be an interactive fantasy woodland. Ring any bells? With children in mind. And then there's going to be other areas going to have characters and attractions from Paramount movies, including Lara Croft's Tomb Raider, Titanic, The Italian Job, and Congo. Now, when I first heard The Italian Job, I thought, does this mean there's a stunt show type thing coming? Apparently not. It's looking more like it's going to be a roller coaster that's linked to some sort of car chase. There's going to be so many things going on, because Paramount actually own quite a few really good franchises, including things like Braveheart. They've got Gladiator, they've got the Godfather trilogy, Transformers, Star Trek, all those sort of franchises are owned by Paramount. They reckon the architects have said 90% of the park and the attractions are already finalised, with a few more ideas still to come. And they reckon it'll be sort of 2 or 3 years then this resort opens. Now, interestingly, another thing to try and rival Disneyland Paris idea is that the parks are going to be open into the early hours, because the Spanish like to go out late for dinner. You know, the parks aren't likely to open much earlier than 10 a.m. and will be open much, much later. But I don't know, what do you think? Is this going to rival Disneyland Paris, do you think? Or is it just another nice possible style park for people to visit?
I think it'll rival it, because I think it's been done in the right country.
You reckon, Craig?
Yeah, I do. I do think it'll rival it, but, you know, people might say, Thorpe Park's about 1,000 miles away. Yeah, whatever. But this is a proper theme park in a nice hot country with loads of interesting things. And come on, Tomb Raider. Yes, please.
Craig wants to go just for the meet and greet. That's it.
Yeah.
He just wants to go and try out the meet and greet that's there with Lara Croft. I was looking at the website for the Korean version, and it does look like there's going to be some, you know, they've really thought this through, and there's going to be some really good attractions that go in there. I'm sort of quite excited to see it. I don't think it will rival Disneyland Paris. You know, I don't think they've got the following or the fan base to do that. But I certainly think they're going to give it a good try, and I certainly hope it prevails and becomes a good resort for people to go to. Would it be something that would drag you down to the south of Spain to go and visit?
Yeah, it might do, because it's Spain, it's warm, it's somewhere to go, it's probably cheaper to fly over there and cheaper to eat and everything else like that. Yeah, I think Disneyland Paris was just in the wrong place. It was a bit of a mistake to put it in advance.
Craig?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure you can get a cheap flight down there. And
you can.
Yeah,
it's where you go. Airlines go. Unfortunately, it's only about half an hour from my parents' house. So, you know, I'll have to go and visit when it opens. But you're right.
What if Harry get a go?
Yeah, Harry might get to come. I might take him with me on that one. But Murcia Airport and Alicante Airport, that's reasonably close as well, both have a lot of budget airlines flying into it. So that's certainly going to be a draw for people, in the fact that they're going to be able to get to these locations for very, very cheap. Whereas Paris has a few budget airlines, but nowhere near as many as they have to the southeast corner of Spain. But we will keep you updated on that and keep you posted as that park begins to develop and all the other bits and pieces start to come out about that. And hopefully on the 25th of March, when we get a bit more information about it, we'll stick that up on DisneyBrit.com along with all the info we've got up there already. Right, let's move into Disneyland Paris then. And over the past couple of weeks, Disneyland Paris's management held the annual general meeting, and there were some interesting things to come out of that.
Yeah, first of all, the AGM, yeah, they wanted to apologise for not telling us about anything they've decided to put in place, but they said the Disney Brit podcast will bring them all up to date.
Okay.
Sorry, you want more?
Yeah, that'd be nice, yeah.
Okay. reading off the Disney Brit side, it goes, much of the meeting was boring and a little mundane. Basically, a lot of it was around finance, and yeah. Of course, we all know that, you know, Disneyland Paris had to, you know, consolidate the loans into one easier payment with Ocean Finance. So, you got 15 million visits, 85% hotel occupancy, record attendance in S2, and growing improvement in customer spend. That's because you put the prices up so much. They also said revenues were up 4%, net loss narrowed by 28%. You know, you just couldn't say that to your bank manager, could you?
No, you couldn't.
I know. Yeah. Debt reimbursement of 90 million euros. Go, look, I know I'm in debt. But look, my net loss is less than 28% now.
I'll tell you what's really interesting. I mean, there's been things, you know, they've basically said, yeah, things are looking good. You know, it could have been a bit iffy in 2011. The second half with all our promotions really helped, and now we look like DFS because all we're offering is promotions continually. Therefore, people get bored of the promotions and they no longer have any value. But the thing which actually got me was the attendance of Contry. And this is what I look at and think, you built this in the wrong place, Sunshine. Yeah. France, 51%. UK, only 12%. Spain, only 9%. Do you know one of the biggest shocks here? Germany, right next door, but one. Like the next door, but one neighbours. 3%. And you know what? I look at all of this and go, you've made a massive mistake building this in France.
We'll start off with the French were really against it. They were sort of boycotting the park, saying, we don't want this American rubbish here, get it out. And they didn't go, and it's only sort of over the past 10 years or so that the French...
Because they're probably getting some fantastic local deals now.
Oh, probably, yeah, they are. And they're, you know, you look at things like the Francilian Annual Pass, which is dirt cheap. And, okay, it has a lot of blackout days, but if you're close, it's a perfect one for you to go and just use the days that aren't blacked out. But, yeah, it would have been nice to have had it in this country.
No, I don't think this country would have, would have just been as bad because...
Spain or somewhere like that.
Has to be Spain, because at the end of the day, putting this country in the French haters and the Germans haters, so they probably wouldn't come across, and our weather is lousy unless you made it completely indoor, a bit Tokyo-ish. Yeah. You know, so it has to be, for me, you want something which has got some heat to it and cheap flights, and it's all there, and chief, it would be Spain. And, you know, I know they looked at it and there was issues there and they had to move slightly up north and they had to move up north again, but big mistake. Lousy weather, appalling situation, location. Spain for me all the way, and I think this proves the point. Europeans, especially Germans, should be travelling, and they're not even travelling that distance.
Now, I know I don't get on my soapbox very often, but I'm getting back on my soapbox again today because they also announced at the general meeting the new elements to it as well. Tarzan Encounters coming back, and then the Lights Motors Action stunt show is going to feature Lightning McQueen, which I'm quite looking forward to see, as long as they haven't hyped this up as in, come and see Lightning McQueen in it, and then he does 10 seconds, and then he clears off. But the one thing that I would hope they'd have done was put a new show in. But they've gone back to the old Tarzan Encounter. Now, Tarzan was never a classic movie, okay? It was okay, but it was never the groundbreaking movie that they hoped it would be. But yet they're bringing back this Tarzan Encounter show again. And yes, I know it costs a lot of money to create a new set, but I'm sort of just a bit sick to death with seeing this show coming back again and again and again. I've seen it enough times. I'm bored of it now. I want a new show. And yes, I know that people listen to this saying, okay, it's great that we've got the show's back and they're starting to bring back live entertainment, but I just want a new show. Is anybody else sort of like agreeing with me on this, that, you know, we'd like to see something new in there, especially as it's a jungle themed show in Frontierland, which completely baffles me anyway.
I think it's wrong with the Jungle Book.
I think the problem is we've been grateful that a show has come back there, and you're quite right, we shouldn't be grateful that a show has come back there. We should be going, you know, you did these massive cutbacks, you cut all your staff back, we knew you were cutting back, and now you want to expand because your revenue's up. But as you say, you know, a good Western show, you know, Minnie and Mickey, cowboy-type show would go great.
But they had the Journey into the Jungle Book show at Animal Kingdom when it first opened, and that was a reasonably okay show. You know, there's no reason why they couldn't do something like that here as well if they needed to keep it jungle-themed. But
or bring Nemo across. Nemo's been a massive hit.
Nemo would be amazing in there.
And everything's been done for you already, the choreography, the music. You just need to get it all put together.
Yeah, the thing is, it's not a... Well, I suppose it's not in the movie theme park in Florida either, but they would need a lot of construction work on that venue. The seating would need to be made much bigger. But to be honest, I think they've got a bit of room down there anyway. You think about what's actually in that corner. There's the cowboy cookout, there's the theatre, there's the train station, there's not much else. So they could expand that if they needed to. And do you know what? Finding Nemo is a really good shout. That would be great to see. But if we're talking about brand new things and new attractions that are hopefully coming, Ratatouille Now, we've talked and talked and talked about Ratatouille, and you know we've got this running joke going on with the podcast where we always announce things before Disneyland Paris does. Well, we told you that Ratatouille was coming back in about 2009, and there were lots of little bits and pieces that started to come up. In 2010, we found a picture of what they're calling a Ratatouille ride element on the DavidMackeyDrywall.com website, Californian company who were doing some work for it, and Disney still didn't really announce anything and they kept it quiet. Well, at the AGM, the same AGM as Joseph was talking about a second ago, the shareholders were asking about what is going on with Ratatouille. Is it coming, yes or no? And Philippe Gass, who is the CEO of Disneyland Paris, did admit that the Ratatouille attraction was indeed real, and it was well advanced. The project was well ahead of how of getting into a situation where they're going to start building. But they haven't said anything about when it will definitely be open. But it seems that he has confirmed that the Ratatouille attraction is on its way. He's not confirmed any details about what exactly that's going to be, but it's certainly going to be coming. I wouldn't expect to see it anywhere until somewhere around the end of 2012, maybe even the first quarter of 2013. But it's good news that they are indeed going to be building Ratatouille. It sounds like it's going to be a really exciting attraction. I just hope that we aren't suddenly going to get sort of disappointed when they maybe cancel it. It's happened in the past, you know, Disney have announced stuff and it's never happened. We look at World Showcase, how many pavilions did they announce they were building and they never happened. So I'm sort of hope it is going to be coming. It needs to be added, I think, doesn't it?
Defo.
Just?
No. Do you know, I agree, but why is people having to ask the question?
I think it's because of the fact that we never get anything announced.
But why is that? Why is it all these fantastic things? And why is there somebody at an AGM having to ask the question when they should be? It should be in the slides of, you know, this is what's coming. Yeah. If nothing else, if I was a shareholder, I'd go, hang on, they shouldn't ask you the question. As a shareholder, I want you blasting it from the top of your roof that this is what you're doing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the same with the Toy Story Playland idea, the fact that we'd announced it, we told you it was coming, we got photos of the fact that it was coming, there were billboards up, and then suddenly they were posted up saying, coming August 2010. And everyone went, well, yeah, we knew that, but when are you actually going to officially announce this? It just seems to be an ongoing thing, isn't it? Something that they just seem to be doing continuously. And it's not like, you know, we didn't have any clues that this was coming. The Ratatouille sort of Parisian-style street was built and opened at the same time as Toy Story Playland. It goes round to the Barrel of Monkeys at the back of Toy Story Playland, and then right at the end of the street, there are just blue construction fences. And we know behind there, there's a big empty space that's been cleared, and they need to just begin to work on that area. There were crates with Ratatouille sprayed on the side at one point. They disappeared. And what with the Ratatouille elements on the steelwork of the benches, there was a Gusteau figure at the top of an archway that they took down or covered up. It's obvious there's something happening, and all we just need them to say is, yes, we're building this attraction, this is when it's coming. I don't understand why they have to be so secretive about it when we already know what's going on.
It's a bit like, really, I'll be curious to know a couple of things here. A, whether they actually advertise it in France.
Yeah.
And nowhere else, you know, for the domestic market. And B, do you know, it goes back to what you're saying then. Do you know, I do like a big announcement, say this is happening, and then on me website, I go, well, look, here's some crates arrived with Ratatouille on, and yeah. Oh, here's Gusteau suddenly appeared. You know, that way, as Disney fans, you're talking about it on podcasts. The community's starting to go, oh, look at that. I mean, there's some fantastic Disneyland Paris websites that exist, better than their own. And this could all be built up. It's all about... Walt Disney World does it perfectly, don't they? They do the, you know, this is happening and this is, you know, the fantasy land and touches like that. I just don't understand why they can't do it here. But, je ne sais quoi.
Do we even dare ask Craig about this?
No, move along, it's family show.
Well, you'll hear that on Craig Grant, a monthly show.
The new monthly show from Craig Grant.
Actually, to be honest, it's going to be a weekly show.
It could be a daily show, to be honest.
It could probably, yeah.
Okay, a daily, weekly show. That's fine. Well, there's the news. Thank you for joining me, boys. And coming up next...
boys.
Boys, yeah. Men, boys, girls,
two men,
if you want to call, be called. Coming up next, we've got Nick, who does the Destination Disney radio show with us. When we heard about the news to do with Tokyo Disneyland being involved in the earthquake, we managed to get hold of Lee Cockrell, and Lee was good enough to come onto Destination Disney radio show and talk to us about what it is that Disney do during a crisis, and how he, when working at Walt Disney World for the hurricanes, what they did to the parks and to help guests and to support everything that was going on. So Lee, you'll be hearing in a second, Nick talking to Lee about what he did when he was working at Walt Disney World for those sort of evacuations.
We have with us today Lee Cockrell, the former vice president of operations at Walt Disney World. Lee, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to do it.
Well, Lee, you were there at the Magic Kingdom. You worked at Disney on September 11th, 2001, 10 years ago now. And, you know, can you take us through that day at Walt Disney World, specifically how the cast members handled the guests during a crisis?
Well, that was probably my proudest day in my whole career. For years, we had we developed a very strong emergency operations center, and then we have that's a central one, and then we have them all over the property. And every year we practice several times a year with simulations of what we would do if this happened or that happened or a hurricane or any kind of crisis. And it paid off because that day, I tell you, everything went perfectly. I think we evacuated the parks in about 90 minutes, had everybody on the buses back in their resorts. I must tell you, the cast members were cool, calm, and collected, even though they knew what was going on. The guests really didn't know at that point. And it just went off without a hitch, got them back to their hotels, and then we had to go into a mode of giving people complimentary rooms because they couldn't get on airplanes, they couldn't get out of here, and we ended up having to give a lot of people food because they had maxed out their credit cards. We gave everybody tickets to get back in the park the next day after everything was clear, free phone calls around the world. We had it all pre-planned, what we would do in any case, and we executed that many times through the hurricanes in 04 when we had three in Central Florida in just a few weeks, and 9/11, and one time we had a hostage situation at one of the hotels, and it all went off well. And I suspect that over in Tokyo they're doing just fine. I tell you, all the parks have a very sophisticated emergency plan. I was reading on the internet a little while ago, there were 69,000 people in the park in Tokyo, and it was closed down, and everybody was safe, and they have enough food and things until they can get them out of there. Most people come on the train there, of course, and the trains are shut down and the highways. But I tell you, if I had to pick one place I'd like to be during a real bad emergency, it'd be Disney, because I know the structures are strong and the people are well-trained, and that's the name of the game. Be ready for what might happen.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it looks like your response to an emergency, I mean, definitely seems a lot better than, like, say, how the government maybe even handled Katrina and things like that. I mean...
I don't think anybody anywhere has a better plan than Disney has. We are very sophisticated with the technology we have. We have satellite radios. We have all kinds of backup in case something goes down. We have a very clear way that we operate during an emergency, that the people at the scene of the emergency have the authority to make the decisions, not the people in the central command, because the phones may go down. And we really delegate the right authority at the right level so people can act, and act fast, because that's the, I tell you, fast is the name of the game in a crisis.
So now, are these emergency operation centers that you mentioned at Walt Disney World, do all the Disney parks throughout the world have these?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you guys behind the scenes, guests don't see this, but you're constantly monitoring for anything in the news that might come up that might affect the guests at the park at that time.
Oh, yeah. We had it set up. We could open the emergency center within 30 minutes. Everybody would be there, get it open. We had Orange County Sheriff had somebody there to be with us. We had somebody in their center downtown, Highway Patrol, Reedy Creek. We could pull that thing off. And we practiced and practiced and practiced. We visited all the big emergency centers around the country, too. We went to nuclear power plants to see how they did it, see if we could learn anything from that. Who's responsible, who makes the decisions, how you stop and take a break for a while and try to figure out where you are in an emergency. And It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what kind of training does it take for employees to handle like tens of thousands of guests? I mean, it could get overwhelming if you're not fully prepared.
Yeah, well, I think at each park, we just went through it over and over and talked about it. So all the managers knew what to do at that point. We already had pre-printed tickets ready in case the computer systems went down. We could issue them manually. I mean, we tried to think of every single thing that could happen. And it's why every year, you know, since the early 60s, there had been no hurricanes at Disney. And then we practiced every year. In May, we cleaned up the property, and then we practiced and practiced. And then, you know, one day, there they came.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, I think that was 2004 when Orlando had a bunch of hurricanes hitting them. Now, natural disasters, a bit different than something like 9/11, even much different than an earthquake because it's very much a surprise. But it's still about handling guests in a crisis.
Yeah, it is, and there are other kinds of things that pop up, you know, tornadoes, and, I mean, a guest situation, you know, these days you never know what some crazy person's going to do, and so you just have to be ready to pull the trigger and get in there and get it open and start dealing with it, and I tell you, practice, practice does make perfect. When you do it over and over and over again, it's very instinctive how you react when these kinds of things come up and you know what to do. You've already thought about what you would do.
Now, when a hurricane is coming, you know it is coming and you know in advance. You have the advance warning typically. When is typically the call made to close the park for a hurricane?
Well, it depends. We had Hurricane Floyd a year or two before the 04 hurricanes, and it was decided that when looking at it on the radar, it was as big as this whole state of Florida coming in off the Atlantic. And at that point, about, 14, 15, 16 hours out, we decided to close the park and not take a chance so we could get everybody evacuated, get them out of there. And it turned north and went up and hit Charleston, so we didn't have an issue, but we went ahead and called it anyway, not to take a chance.
In 04, did any of the hurricanes strike with guests inside the park?
Oh, yeah. Park was shut down. Guests were in their rooms for 24 hours. We had box lunches for them. We put them in their rooms, gave them food, and told them to stay away from the windows. And the winds came through, and as soon as, you know, we had 5,000 cast members volunteered to stay on the property so they could get the place cleaned up. And The next morning, the guests woke up. They were shocked. They thought they were going to see this big mess out there, and it was all cleaned up.
Wow.
And we opened, and that was pretty neat.
So what kind of steps are taken with resort guests? You go to the rooms and kind of make sure everybody's okay and warn people about what's coming?
Yeah, we have a lot of people. We put notifications in their rooms because they come back at different times, and we tell them what's going on and what will happen and how long they're anticipated to be in their rooms. And if they need food supplies, they can come. We have box lunches and food they can take to their rooms. And because a lot of the hotels at Disney, a lot of them are internal. That's not a problem. But a lot of those have outdoor, you know, your room opens to the outdoors.
Yeah.
And not an interior corridor. So, yeah, we continue to come in, leave messages on their phones, and eventually, because when, you know, we close the parks by then, so they're either going to get in their cars and drive away from Orlando, or they're going to come back to their hotel. So we get everybody back pretty quick. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be somewhere else, usually.
Now, most of these situations that we're talking about, you evacuated the theme parks. Have you ever had to shut down the park and keep people inside?
No, never had to do that. No. There's been no reason to have to do that. So,
but there's procedures.
Fort Wilderness, for instance, if there's going to be high winds, we evacuate that and we put them in the hotels and get them out of there because of the high winds and the trees there falling on a tent or a motorhome or something like that.
Now, before I let you go, what steps are taken after the crisis and before the park opens?
Well, we have a lot of safety checks. Everybody gets out, and we can make sure everything's cleaned up, and there's no safety issues before we let them out and get the buses running. You know, even some of the things like buses can't run after 40 miles an hour, when the winds are over 40 miles an hour. So that's why you got to move pretty quick, get everybody back where they need to be, because even police and fire trucks and all won't go out after 40 mile an hour winds. So you got to really have your act together. But we just make sure everything's safe and cleaned up, and we run everything to make sure there's no issues, and then... It's a problem, you know, with hurricanes. The next morning, it's bright sunny and everything looks great. Nobody wants to be in their room.
Right.
And even after 9/11, once it was considered that it was safe, people are not going to stay in their room.
Lee, I really do appreciate, once again, you taking time to be with us today and telling us, you know, all about the steps that Disney takes and their leaders to help the guests in times of crisis like we're seeing over there in Tokyo. And I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Columbus Vacation Villas, Central Florida Vacation Home Rentals and Property Management Services. If you are looking for your perfect vacation villa, get in touch with this friendly family-run business, which will go out of their way to make sure your vacation of a lifetime is just that. If you already own a villa in Orlando, then let Columbus take care of everything whilst you are away, giving you complete peace of mind. Check out www.columbus-vacations.com and discover a new world.
We are on in seven.
All right, you can do this. You can do this. You were made for laughter.
Three.
What do you call a monster with no eyes? No idea. Yeah, we'll use that one as the closer. Here we go. Hello, humans. Thank you. You're too kind.
An interactive comedy club so funny, it's scary. The Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor, collecting laughs daily at the Magic Kingdom.
Anyone? Hello?
Well, I can see my old buddy Mike Feedback, the technician up there in the control booth, has given me the signal to take five. Now don't go away, because we have some very special entertainment to follow.
Time to bring back Around the World in 80 Segments, which we haven't done for ages, and we are trekking our way around the Magic Kingdom Resort hotels, and we're stopped on the monorail line at the Grand Floridian Resort. So first off, I think we have to say none of us have stayed at the Grand Floridian Resort before, have we?
And to be honest, I'm staying on the monorail. See you guys later.
Craig, have you stayed there?
No, I haven't. I've wandered around a few times. Yeah, made my presence known.
I've wandered
stolen
down.
A few things.
You were the one that stole them, was it? I've wandered around and I've had a good look around, but it's one of those places that I'd love to afford to stay in, but I never have. I know that Juz is sort of against it in the fact that he doesn't feel comfortable when he goes in there. I think we'll come to that in a little while. But this is a deluxe hotel owned by Disney, obviously. It's known as the Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. It's actually modelled after the Hotel del Coronado, which is in Coronado in California. And they've sort of taken the idea from that and built this resort. 900 rooms within it. It's on the shores of the Seven Seas Lagoons, located directly southwest of the Magic Kingdom's one monorail stop. Occupies around 40 acres, and it's got that sort of turn-of-the-century Victorian theme. You've got the Grand Lobby, which is a five-story area in the centre, and then you've got all the other different sort of corridors, wings that go off from there as well. Opened in August of 1988 and was the fifth resort hotel in Walt Disney World, and it's considered really the flagship of all of the Walt Disney World resorts. Now, the very first thing I think we need to touch upon, because there's people who listen to this thinking, oh, it sounds luxurious, you know, is this the sort of place for me? It's an extremely nice resort. It really is a fantastic resort. But I think people want to know, will they feel out of place if they stayed here? And it'd be interesting to hear your different point of views. Juz, do you want to start us off?
Sorry, what was the question? I wasn't listening.
About whether... Thank you, great. When you'd feel out of place staying here?
No, definitely not, because I come from a middle class family and I've been brought up well. I don't like the riff after that there, to be quite honest with you. I'm quite happy to go there and sit my laptop in the foyer and just sneer at people as they walk past in their holiday making shorts and their fanny packs.
And the truth?
That is the truth, except it's the other way around. I'm the one in the shorts and the fanny pack, wandering past, feeling very... It's too... You know what it is? It's too clinical. It's not homely. It's like, you go to someone, your mate's house, and your mate's house, they've got kids, yet their house is always immaculate. And it always puzzles me, because you come home and go, why can't our house be like that? And you think, how do they do it? But you know what? I like our mess. It's homely, it's our mess, and I'm happy. So I'm happy to go anywhere where I feel comfortable.
Craig, what's your opinion on Grand Floridian? Stuffy or not?
Well, I wouldn't say it was stuffy, but it is kind of top of the tree, isn't it? So it's kind of like, you know, if you were being invited to, I don't know, the Savoy for dinner in London, you wouldn't turn up in trekkie bottoms and a T-shirt. Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, it is a different environment. If you felt uncomfortable in that sort of environment, then fine. You know, I've never stayed there. I've walked around there a few times. In fact, I've never eaten in there. And, you know, I have, in fact, actually, I've been in there to kind of spy on people getting married. And I've never really felt out of place
in
my
photos.
Yeah.
Right, he goes for the food.
And, you know, I did the buffet. I've never changed what I'm wearing, you know, and I walk around in a pair of shorts and T-shirt and flip-flops or whatever, and that's, you know, that's fine in the lobby area. But, you know, you do see all sorts down there. You see some very well-off families and individuals around there, and, you know, if that's where they want to waste their money, that's entirely up to them.
Right, there we go. You see, from my point of view, I went for a wedding, and we had sort of the reception at the Grand Floridian, and we were all well dressed up. You know, obviously we had the bride in a wedding dress, we were all the grooms in our proper suits, and I still felt really not uncomfortable. I didn't feel like I could relax in there. That was my problem, and it's that ability just to be able to relax. Is what I want on a holiday. So staying in somewhere like Saratoga Springs or staying in the Polynesian, because the Polynesian Grand Floridian are both deluxe category places to stay. And I can go into the Polynesian in my shorts and my T-shirt, go and enjoy my breakfast at Kona Cafe and walk out again and not worry. Whereas I always think it's almost like the Grand Floridian is judging me when I'm in there. And if I'm not in the right sort of shorts, it won't let me out of the lift, you know, until someone gives me another pair or something like that. But, you know, that's just our opinion. Obviously, it's not everybody's opinion. I know a lot of people who love the Grand Floridian. It's their favourite place to stay. So let's talk about staying there and talk about some of the types of rooms you can stay in. You've got the Garden View, which is your sort of lowest category of room. Garden View room features a balcony overlooking the Grand Floridian's landscape gardens. You've also got the Pool Marina View. That also has a balcony, and the views are either over the courtyard pool or the Grand Floridian Marina over at Seven Seas Lagoon. You've got the Lagoon View, which guarantees a view of the Seven Seas Lagoon, but may not include a view of the Magic Kingdom. And then in the main building, you also have some Magic Kingdom View or Castle View rooms. You've got the Jacuzzi Honey Room as well. So all of these different areas you've got Lodge Tower rooms, you've got Concierge rooms, and they've all got different levels of sort of views that you've got. Now, you stayed in a Castle View room Polynesian, didn't you, Craig?
I did indeed, yes. And Jussie has.
Oh, Jussie has as well.
Yeah.
I see, I'm the only one who hasn't then. Would you say that it was worth the extra money to stay in a Magic Kingdom View room?
I got a grader for free. Hey!
Hello, Adam. What are you doing over in Southport? What did I do? Well, we only stayed for one night because that's all I could afford, and we had cast member, thank you, Sherry, cast member rates, but it was still $400 or something for one night. Which I think is, you know, I couldn't justify a week of that or anything. I mean, one night, it was our 10th wedding anniversary, and that, you know, special occasion, that's fine, but it hurt.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was nice watching the fireworks from the room, you know, from the balcony. That was quite nice. But, I mean, you only need to look at it once. I'll take a photograph, to be honest with you. If I can save myself some money, I'd park myself around by the car park, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of people do. Let's give you some rough prices, and these are in dollars, for the sort of stuff you would be paying if you were going rack rate for your room. Garden View room can stretch anywhere from about $440 all the way up to something ridiculous like $700. You've got the Lagoon View room, that again can go anywhere from about $490 all the way up to $800. The Magic Kingdom View, if you want to wake up and see the Magic Kingdom every morning, you can get it as cheap as about $500, but it can go all the way up to about $865. You've then got the deluxe room with a garden view, which is classed as higher than the Magic Kingdom view room. That's somewhere from about $520 all the way up to $800, so it's slightly cheaper. You've got the standard room club level. That one there goes from anywhere about $545 up to $880. And then you get to some of the bigger boys, the one-bedroom suite at club level, and you get the one-bedroom Magic Kingdom view. So the one-bedroom suite, that's going to cost you anywhere from $1,140 to $1,700. And if you want the Magic Kingdom view room on club level, that's slightly cheaper for some of them. You're looking at about $1,135 to about $1,725. So there's not much different. Then you've got the two-bedroom suite club level, That one's going from around 1,760 to 2,500. Now, I'm going to go all the way through all of these, but you get a rough idea of the sort of price that you're going to be paying for a lot of these rooms. Outer lodges and things obviously get slightly more expensive. You've got the Sugarloaf two-bedroom suite. That can range anywhere from sort of $2,000, sorry, all the way up to about $2,600. So we're looking at a huge amount of money to stay here. So it's not the cheapest in the world, but it's still, you know, for some people, if you're going to be doing something special, as Craig did for Polynesian, it might be well worth staying. Where are the rooms closest to? Well, if you're looking for somewhere like the beach, guest rooms, including the main building and the Big Pine Key, are pretty good. The monorail, you're going to want to stay at a guest room in the main building, or rooms in Sago Key and Sugarloaf Key and Big Pine Key. Buses, well, the buses are located just outside and below the monorail, so it's the same sort of locations. You want the main building for the restaurants, with exception of Narcooses, when rooms in Conch Key are actually closest to Narcooses, besides those in the main building. The marina, you're looking at Sugarloaf Key or Conch Key, and you're also looking at Sago Key as a good place as well. And finally, for the pools, you're looking at the Boca Chica, the Big Pine Key, and the Sugarloaf Key as good locations for those as well. They're also really well located for the courtyard pool and the kids' pool as well. Amenities within Grand Floridian Resort. Well, you get 24-hour room service, which is pretty good going. You can also visit the Grand Floridian Spa and the Grand Floridian Health Club. Anybody visited any of these places?
Yeah, I can't get me out of there.
That's the only problem when we cover hotels that none of us have stayed in. It's basically just about information giving rather than actual opinion. Although we will be doing... I'll explain the dining bit of this a little bit later. We've got the Grand Floridian Spa's got... Go on, you were going to say something, Craig?
I was just going to say about the spa. I mean, there's a few spas within Disney, and what I've heard, not being a spa attendee, is that this is the best one.
Yes, apparently so. This is the one that would be the award-winning spa. Treatment hours are 8 a.m. to 8 p.m, so there's a good range there for you to be able to go and enjoy those spas. And if you go to the Walt Disney World website, there's still, you can receive a complimentary gift if you redeem this voucher, and I think it was something like $50 off the last time I looked. I don't know quite what it is now. You've got the health club as well. That is open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Guests must be at least 14 years of age, but they've got all sorts of machines in there if you really are daft enough to want to do exercise on your holiday. Looking at us three, we are the fitness of the picture of health, so of course we don't need to go to a health club. Anybody knows us will know that's not at all true. There are babysitting and childcare services on board. There's also a salon. And one thing I realised with the Grand Floridian that I'm not quite sure whether there is in most of the others, and that is Wi-Fi internet access that's available, or the PC and laptop. You can purchase it from a Wi-Fi access card from the business centre. Because, of course, this is also a convention centre as well. Anybody think of any other hotels that have got Wi-Fi? Other than, I can think, Coronado Springs. But that's all I can think of.
No, I've stayed in the Treehouse Villas. They didn't, because we had to plug it in.
Yeah.
So, I can't think of any.
You get a lot of Ethernet cables in your rooms, but I can't think of any other resort where you've got Wi-Fi access. Juz?
Get with the times, shouldn't they?
They should get with the times. They should, you're right. But they've got a business centre there, because obviously this is also a convention resort as well. That's open from 7 a.m. till 5. You can send faxes, photocopies, mails, all that sort of stuff as well. And also the convention centre that's there, 40,000 square feet of space, 2 grand ballrooms, 16 breakout rooms. I'm not going to go into all the details because you're probably not going for a convention anyway, but there's lots of space there as well. Just to let you know about your room amenities, the things that you've got within your rooms. You've got cable TVs, you've got DVD players with a DVD and VCR combo, high-speed internet access that's complimentary for select suite accommodations, but others can pay the additional fee. Coffee makers, refrigerators, iron and ironing board, hairdryer, in-room safe, newspaper delivery, voicemail, turn-down service, whirlpool tub, a pack and play playard available, which is sort of like a crib sort of idea. You've got laundry facilities, and you've got robes as well, which is the robes,
slippers.
I don't know about slippers. I don't.
Not going. I'm not staying.
Just take your own. Don't be so lazy.
No.
They also have a few extra sort of services that you can get over at the Grand Floridian that you can't get at some of the other resorts. Firstly, something called the Disney Pirates Adventure, designed for those aged 4 to 12. They board a pirate ship for a two-hour adventure, and while the boat sails out of one port of call to another, crew members provide instructions in pirate lingo, and when the ship runs aground, everybody goes ashore to search for buried treasure. They have a special pirate bandana, snack and beverage also included. $34 per person. Do you know, and I saw that and I thought, wow, is that all it is? Because I don't think $34 is bad for a two-hour experience.
Am I don't think I've seen that. Where do I think I've seen that?
I don't know.
Has it been going a while, is it new?
It's been going a little while now, but it's $34 plus tax per child, which I didn't think was bad at all. And if you're...
Do you know what? That isn't bad. I paid more than that in Clearwater to go on the proper pirate ship.
But this is for kids, though, isn't it?
Yeah, so you just send your kids off for a couple of hours.
No. See, again, I don't like this. I'm sorry. You're going on holiday as a family. Stay as a family. Don't be whacking your kids off while you're going to do something else. Stick it as a family. Once in a lifetime holiday. God.
It's only 2 hours, it's fine.
No, I know people are going all day and put the kids in kids club and they're just going to sit by the pool. No, it's a family holiday.
You see, I don't get that. I don't get the, we want to
come. Yeah, so you don't even take yours.
let's stick him in the kids club for a couple of hours. But this is quite a nice thing for them to do. Something.
Not when you're in Disney World. Go out and experience and look at your kid. That's your memories because they grow up so quickly and then they're obnoxious and then they look at university and they cross the earth and then they leave.
Something tells me somebody's got a little sore point to rest this evening. Okay. Well,
Jazz, do you want to come on my new show, mate?
Yes. Okay. I'm going on Jamie Kyle tomorrow.
Craig, would you send your kids on this if they wanted to go?
For a couple of hours, I probably would, yeah.
I think it's just for 2 hours, and 2 hours out of an entire holiday isn't too bad.
To a kid, it's a long time, and it's memories you're missing because you're not there.
That is true. That's the only thing about it.
No, I'd give them the video camera and say, film me, come back.
See a video of this, kids. Take your camera and get this sorted.
They use flips at school. Yeah, Kieran, take that with you, mate. Yeah. Don't throw it out.
Sorted. If you are interested in that, though, you can ring 407-WDW-DINE, which is 939-3463. Spaces are limited, so you have to make sure you call well in advance. There's a jogging trail over at the Grand Floridian Resort and Spa as well, for those of you who want to look like you're doing exercise when you're actually going for a brisk walk. The actual jogging track is a one-mile trail between the Grand Floridian and the Polynesian. So
is that all?
It's just 1 mile, yeah. I could do that in 4 minutes.
Exactly.
You've got the Mouseketeer Club, which is another supervised activity centre that kids can go along to. Accommodates children aged 3 to 12, entertainment with the arts and crafts, computer games, Disney movies, dinner and snacks. And reservations are required for the Mouseketeer Club. It's open from 4:30 to midnight, and you can call front desk or concierge to sort that out. They have something that happens at a lot of resorts as well, which is the Movies Under the Stars, and they sort of have these inflatable screens that they put up, and they also have sort of the big projectors that project onto those. They're quite cool to go and enjoy. You've also got specialty cruises. Now, although these specialty cruises aren't specific to just the Grand Floridian guests, they do go from the Grand Floridian area, and they do go to some of the other ones as well. You've got the Grand one, you've got the Celebration cruises, but because they've actually got a port or a dock at the Grand Floridian, it means you can access some of these from there as well. If you're again still feeling energetic, you've got tennis that you can enjoy there as well. You've also got the watercraft rentals. You've got the little pontoon boats and the sea racers, which you can enjoy as well, and you can hire those out from the pontoon there too. And then one other thing to mention, which they have, it's a dining sort of one, but I'm going to mention it as a special thing that happens, and that's the Wonderland Tea Party. That's from 2 till 3 p.m. every day, every weekday. Designed again for children aged 4 to 12, can join Alice and her curious friends at the 1900 Park Fair, where they have tea, which is actually apple juice, and crumpets, which is cupcakes. So it's apple juice and cupcakes rather than tea and crumpets. And they can meet all the characters from Alice in Wonderland, and scan spaces are limited for that as well. And call ahead for 407-WDW-DINE. Anybody want to add anything about any of those? No? Okay. In that case, no. I shall move on. Just a few transportation things for you as well. Really useful resort if you want to be able to get around to places easily. You've got monorail boats to the Magic Kingdom, monorail to Transportation Ticket Centre, then transfer for Epcot. You've got buses to most of the other parks. You've got buses throughout to places like Wild World of Sports and to Downtown Disney. So it's fairly easy for you to get to. Boats from the Magic Kingdom to get to all of the other resorts around the Seven Seas Lagoon, so your Polynesia and your Fort Wilderness, your Wilderness Lodge, and also obviously quite easy to get to your other resorts around Epcot and things like that as well. So it's a nicely placed resort, I think, if you want ease of access to a lot of places. Would you not agree?
Yep.
Oh, it's beautiful. There's no denying it looks stunning and it's got everything you want. It's just so expensive.
It is just very expensive. I think that's one other thing we do need to mention about the Grand Floridian before we move on, and that is the holiday overlay that we get every single Christmas. They have what is possibly the most amazing gingerbread house that they have down in the middle of the Grand Floridian lobby. Has anybody been Christmas time and seen this?
No, it's never been at the time I've been, but I've seen pictures of it and I've seen them making it.
Yes, they do that time lapse, don't they? Which is brilliant.
They do time lapse, and they also have been on television with it as well on the Food Network.
Food
Network is great. I love the Food Network. We sit and watch like the cake challenges and all sorts. I shouldn't be admitting that, should I? Television. They have this gingerbread house that is big enough, basically, for them to sell gingerbread from. And they sell small gingerbread houses, they sell gingerbread tiles, and all those sort of holiday style decorations, which are great. And if you are there at the holiday time, I think this goes for all the resorts, though. You have to tour the resorts and take a good look around during holiday. But the gingerbread house is fantastic. And if you go sort of just before Christmas time, you can see how they build it, and they have like a solid chocolate Santa that goes out the front, all of the decorations that they actually have on it as well, made from icing and all those bits and pieces, are fantastic. It really is well worth going to see.
Can I just say, while you were rambling on, I just did a little look on a travel agent website. I won't mention who they are because I hate them. But if you were going family of four, two kids, going 5th of September, so you take your kids out of school for 2 weeks because we agreed that's fine. Well, I agreed that was fine and I'm speaking, so it's up to me. The adult price for 2 weeks at the Grand Floridian, this is just for one of you, is £2,500.
Wow. Does that include resort park tickets or...?
No.
So that's just flights and accommodation.
But, yeah, to put it into context, though, same 2 weeks to Polynesian is £100 cheaper.
Okay.
That's the only difference, £100 difference between the two. If you go down to where you stayed, Saratoga Springs, it's £2,000.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I mean, the difference between the Grand Floridian and the Poly for £100, I'd save $100 and go to the Poly.
Yeah. We know it's expensive. We know it's an expensive resort, and that's the whole point. You know, it is the flagship resort. That's likely to be the case. So the rates we've given you, those costs, are rack rates. Don't take those as going, oh, they're far too expensive for us. You can obviously shop around a little bit and find them a little bit cheaper. But I think that sort of sums up the Grand Floridian Resort itself. What we've still got to do is the dining locations within the Grand Floridian. We didn't do that today purely for the fact that there are 6 different locations within the Grand Floridian that you can eat. And we want to make sure we give them all proper time. So the next segment of Around the World in 8 Seconds, we're going to do the Grand Floridian Resort dining options. So they are coming, but they're just going to be a different section. Does anybody want to say anything else about the Grand Floridian before we leave it behind?
Yeah, I can't afford it. And yeah, do you know what? If I could afford it, I wouldn't. I think there's nicer resorts, which we're going to touch on, which are a billion, trillion, gillion times better, in my opinion.
And also, you know, if you're going to Walt Disney World to enjoy the theme parks, you're not always going to be in your hotel room enough to warrant spending that sort of money on a place to stay.
You could spend much better.
Yeah, definitely could. Well, there we go. That rounds up the show. Thank you once again to Juz and Craig and Nick who has made his guest appearance again, and also, of course, Lee Cockerell for coming to the show. You can find out more about Lee at leecockerell.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Columbus Vacation Villas. Find out more about them at www.columbus-vacations.com. Check out our website, disneybrit.com. You can find out all the latest information, all the latest news on there. We're updating that regularly, daily, even sometimes more than once daily. You can email us your comments, your questions, and your suggestions at podcast@disneybrit.com. You can ring our voicemail numbers on 0121 288 2858 if you're in Europe. And if you're in the US, Jez?
407-545-7980.
You can visit us on Facebook as well. We've got all our groups over there. We've got the Mouse Meets, the Mouse Mag, the Disney Brit, the Iron Orlando, the Destination Disney. You can friend us up over there as well. And talking about all of those other podcasts, you can still check out the Iron Orlando and Destination Disney radio shows. They're on Heartbeat Radio. Find that at www.heartbeatradiousa.com. And also, you can download the podcasts on iTunes pretty much the day or the day after they were broadcast live. Now, thanks to everyone. Continue to leave reviews on iTunes. Really is quite helpful to tell people just how terrible we are and how much they need to listen. And you can go over to our YouTube channel at Disney Brit Podcast, where we're putting videos up there, and we're any of our vidcasts we always put up on YouTube as well. Don't forget Mouse Mag. You can pick up the first issue of Mouse Mag. It's still available. If you go over to MagCloud and take a look over there, at the moment they are currently offering 25% off. They're going to offer 25% off the cost of the magazine. The magazine is cheap enough anyway, because we don't make any money on it. It's just the printing cost. You can pick up over there until, I think, it's the 17th of March. You can get 25% off, so it makes it so much
cheaper. It's a big price. It's about $2.20 cheap. It really is ridiculously cheap now.
Is that what it is? Another $2.20 off?
Yeah, so it comes out to about $5 something, which, when you consider, it's exactly the same as you'd pay for a magazine shop. So much so, I'm even buying a copy.
Look at that. So you can get it for $5, and I think it costs a couple of dollars to get it delivered. So overall in the UK, sort of £5 for a magazine, which isn't bad going.
No.
So you can go over there, see that, and also that will be coming out. The new edition of Mouse Mag will be out at the end of March. So listen out for that. We're currently frantically making our way through all the elements from Mouse Mag as well. And that's pretty much it, and leaves me with nothing else to say other than thank you, guys.
Always a pleasure. Never a chore.
Never a chore.
Actually, no, it's the other way around.
And the next edition of the Disney Brit Podcast will be out on Wednesday, the 30th of May. So until then, we'll see you.